Joining us next is NPR science correspondent Joe Palca. Joe's been following events as they've unfolded today. Joe, bring us up to date on what we know about what happened today.
Well, what we know seems to begin with a very normal reentry this morning. But as the space shuttle was returning to Earth, you know, the first thing it does is it fires rockets to slow it down, essentially, and it will start to fall out of orbit, which is all planned, and then it makes some maneuvers so that it's coming down heat tiles first. So it's the tiles and the plane looks more like a normal plane flying through the atmosphere, although at this point it's hardly flying at a speed a plane would fly at. When it got over Central Texas, it was going at Mach 18.3, which is 18.3 times the speed of sound, and it was at 200,000 feet. And at 7:53 a.m. Central Time, sensors on board the spacecraft began to behave in a strange way. Various places on board the spacecraft, in the wheel well, on the aileron surfaces, things that were supposed to tell the temperature were suddenly giving signals that were off scale, as they call them, meaning it looked like the sensors had gone out. Now, this information first came into mission control in Houston, and they analyzed that, brought it to the attention of the astronauts. The astronauts acknowledged that they could see that on their sensor panel as well, and that was the last sort of discussion, apparently, between the astronauts and the ground. These sensors were just information, because there was very little they could do about this information. As I said, the shuttle is screaming back to Earth, and there's no powered flight to take it back up into the sky, as it were. So that seems to be at 8 o'clock when whatever was causing these sensors to go haywire suddenly turned into a catastrophic failure, and debris of the shuttle spread over a 60-mile area in Central Texas.
I suppose you can only imagine what it's like for that 10 or 15 minutes between when they lost contact and when the shuttle was supposed to appear. You're probably always hoping that it's some error.
Yes. I when I first heard about that it was delayed, I thought, they don't delay the space shuttle. I mean, it's coming down.
It can't
it's
circle.
It's not going into a holding pattern. It's coming down fast, and it's going to land someplace. And that was what was the first was a very alarming piece of information that I got when I first learned about this. But it's going to take a while. There are hints and suggestions about what might have gone wrong. There was a piece of insulating material that came off the insulation between the external fuel tank and the shuttle. As it was lifting off, it appeared to hit the left wing. The sensors on the left sides were the ones that seemed to malfunction. Is this related? We don't know. Is the answers, NASA officials seem to be saying, are going to come from the debris that they're able to collect on the ground?
Well, talk to me about the process. What happens now with the investigation?
Well, I think now it's probably somewhat close, although it's obviously in a different scale to what goes on in any kind of aircraft in accident investigation. There's, in NASA's case, there'll be an internal incident team, as they call it, and an external team bringing in experts from outside the agency, and they'll all converge on the data. And the data isn't just the temperature sensors and all the other myriad of dials and gauges that are all being sent down with information to Earth, but also the records of all the parts that were used to build this particular shuttle and all the instruments that went into it and all the repairs, because NASA keeps exquisite records on all this, and of course whatever they can learn from the bits and pieces that fell to the ground.
And Joe, just very briefly, the shuttle is used from time to time to resupply the International Space Station. There are two astronauts and one cosmonaut currently aboard that space station, and shuttle flights are suspended. How are they affected here?
Well, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the shuttle flights. There was one scheduled for March. We presume that will be delayed in some way. There is a Progress rocket, which is a Russian unmanned or unpiloted rocket that goes up supposedly, I think, even tomorrow, that has enough supplies on board to keep the crew, you know, with their consumables, as they're called, food, water, what have you, until mid-June. So they're all right for a while, and they won't be breaking any longevity records. But yes, this is a consideration. Oh, and they also can be brought back. I mean, they were supposed to come back aboard the shuttle But they can be brought back aboard a Soyuz capsule that's currently bolted to the space station.
Throughout our special coverage this evening, Joe, we've been turning to Jim Pawelczyk. He is a former astronaut who flew on Columbia in 1998, and he joins us again now. Mr. Pawelczyk, can you just remind us briefly again the kind of focus that astronauts place and are told to place on safety?
Safety is paramount, and throughout NASA, safety is number one. About 80% of space shuttle training is for off-nominal conditions, the things that you don't expect to happen normally, but if they do, you're ready to deal with them.
Joe Palka?
I'm just wondering, Mr. Pawelczyk, when you're faced with the knowledge, you know, you're trained for all these incidents and you train for all these conditions that could perhaps crop up, that must generate certain, I don't want to call it fear, but, you know, a concern for any rational human being getting into a spacecraft. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think your listeners, and not to trivialize the issue at all, but your listeners can relate to this by thinking of a car. If you thought about all the possible things that could go wrong with a car or an automobile accident, you'd never get behind the wheel. The same is true with a space shuttle. But those are built in gradually in the training. You learn the contingencies one at a time. You put the plans in place, and when you have the entire suite of packages, it's quite assuring in terms of what you can do if you need to.
But I'm sure that at least getting into a car seems a little bit safer than getting aboard a space shuttle.
Absolutely. If you want to look at the actual numbers, you know, there are various calculations of this. I believe prior to Challenger, it was about 1 in 143 of a risk of loss of vehicle. It's now approximately 1 in 250, I believe.
But that feeling of being prepared and being able to have things to do in case something does go wrong is probably what allows you to feel like you can control the situation, at least to some degree.
That's exactly right. Everybody needs a plan, and everybody needs to know how to execute the plan, and you can be certain that this crew is extremely well-trained, as they all are.
Jim Pawelczyk is a former astronaut who flew Columbia in 1998. Joe Palka is an NPR science correspondent. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You're recapping welcome. Briefly what we know so far, the space shuttle Columbia broke apart at an altitude of 200,000 feet over Texas this morning, 16 minutes away from landing at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. A few minutes earlier, ground controllers noticed problems with the hydraulic sensors in the left wing, loss of pressure in the left tire, or at least a sensor that said so, and structural heating. Then they lost all communication with the spacecraft. On takeoff, something came off the left side, but no one knows whether there was any connection with the accident. 7 astronauts were on board, all of them killed, 6 Americans, and the first Israeli to go into space. We'll take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll have more on this story.